Well, let's get on with the lesson here. It's
good stuff. All your kids are an inspiration.
They are. Hey, now, what's going on with this? Is not working.
Too much time.
Anyways, yeah. There we go.
It's hard to get Seth to smile, but I'm working on it.
You're working on it?
Yeah.
Well, you keep working on it.
Every time I see him, I say, "Seth, smile," and he'll go.
I might have to slide down. This thing might not be working tonight. All right. Well, last week we talked a little bit about, anybody remember what we talked about?
Cain and Abel.
Yeah.
And why God refused Cain's sacrifice but accepted Abel's.
Yep. And why did God reason with Cain?
Reason with Cain?
Give him another chance and he still loved him.
Yes, he was giving him an opportunity to repent. He loved him, and that was because of his love for him. Yep. And he wanted to understand that Cain must bring a blood offering, just like God slew the animals when he clothed Adam and Eve. And so tonight we're going to skip through a little bit here and get to the story. We're going to go through some genealogy here a little bit, and then we're going to go right over into the story of Noah. And we are now going to transition from the creation part and everything that took part back here in creation into the stories that, as we go through, of Noah and Moses and Abraham. We're going to get into a bunch of stories in there, and it will go very quickly through our timeline. From here on, we're not going to cover all the stories. Like right now, we've been going through the first one, chapters 1 through 4, and we've been on that for 12 weeks. We're going to go real quick and we'll jump. And I think we even jump tonight. We get all the way over to Genesis 6, 7, and 8. We get into some of those and then we move on from there. So let's read Genesis 5, verses 3 through 5, and let's see what takes place.
All together, Adam lived. Altogether, Adam lived a total of 930 years, and then he died. When Seth had lived 105 years, he became the father of Enosh. After he became the father of Enosh, Seth lived 807 years and had other sons and daughters. What am I reading to?
That's just 3 through 5. So.
I started wrong. I'm sorry. When Adam had lived 130 years, he had a son in his own likeness, in his own image, and he named him Seth. After Seth was born, Adam lived 800 years and had other sons and daughters. Altogether, Adam lived a total of 930 years, and then he died.
All right, yes. And so if you remember the Facebook post or picture with the years that Beth did for me, that paper that shows that, you got this 930 years, and then he died. And if you do the math and do the calculation like she did here through this, we'll begin to see that some of these other individuals that lived many years on the earth would have been around when Adam was still alive. And I find that very fascinating. I'm glad that Beth did that. She's not here tonight to go through this lesson with us, but we think about it. But we get to this phrase, and then he what?
Died.
He dies. Why did he die?
Because of sin.
Because sin, right. And because Adam had sinned, right? And so death had entered the world. And what were the three deaths? Anybody remember?
Spiritual.
Spiritual. And spiritual is what? What's the spiritual death mean?
Separation from God.
Yep. Separation from a spiritual relationship with God. Then we have the physical death, which is what we just talked about here. And what does that mean?
It means just when your body dies.
Right. Your soul and your spirit leave the body. So they leave and go back to God. Every man and woman's spirit, when they die, returns to God, the Bible says. And so how that takes place and what that looks like, I can't tell you. But it says that everybody's spirit returns to God. And then the soul lives on forever somewhere, either with God or in the lake of fire in hell, as the other part of it. So separation, eternal death would be separation from God in the lake of fire, in the final death. as we know it. And so we have those three deaths. So Adam, he dies. He experiences what? He experiences the soul and the spirit leaving from the body. And as we understand it, he would be with God now. His soul would return to God because he's listed as what? One of the men of faith in the New Testament, right? We talked a little bit about that. And so now we, again, we have to assume that, but based on God's word. Not everybody there. Cain, when he died, didn't connect with God, right? So his spirit and his body, his spirit and soul left his body, and his soul would have went to the lake of fire, and that's where he would have been for, and he's still there. Adam's descendants also died. We can go on and continue, and that phrase "he died" occurs repeatedly all throughout this chapter. And he died, and he died. Why do you think God would put in there "and he died"? I mean, why would God need to remind us of that?
Because everybody's going to die.
Okay.
Probably through sin.
Through sin. And God's reminding us that, hey, I said you would die if you ate of the tree, right? And because sin entered the world, you will die. So God is reminding man here in this chapter 5 over and over again, death is a real thing. It happens. It's part of life now because of Adam and Eve's sin. All the people that are listed, the people that listed in Genesis 5, are from Seth's family line. You'll notice that we won't see any of the lineage or the family line of Cain listed here. It is Seth's family line. It was people from Seth's family line who continued to look for the coming of the deliverer. Remember when Seth was born, he grew up. He was the son that Adam and Eve had after Cain killed Abel, and then Cain left and had his own. But then when they had Seth, then they had this, Seth had a son named Enosh, and it says at that time people began to call on the name of the Lord. So it was Seth's line that began to continue to carry on that, hey, the deliverer is coming. We believe in this. This is something we're looking forward to. So we have that picture of that going through there. Seth had a son named Enoch, and Enoch, or one of Seth's descendants, I should say, was a man named Enoch. And let me see if I can skip through here real quick. And we're going to get to Adam and Eve, Noah, right here before we get to Noah. Down here on the bottom box, it says from Adam to Noah. So you have Adam, who begat Seth, and then Seth begat Enosh. Enosh begat Canaan. Canaan, I'm not even going to get these names, Mahalalel or whatever, Jared. And then Enoch, you have Enoch. And then you have Methuselah, Lamech, and Noah. Well, Enoch, in the line there, Enoch was a man who was born a sinner, just like we were. He lived his life and believed in God in such a way, and followed God in the way that he was instructed to. And because he believed and because he pleased God in such a way, does anybody know what happened to Enoch?
He disappeared.
In other words, he was taken up. In other words, the Bible says it this way about Enoch when he dies. Enoch lived 365 years walking in close fellowship with God. Then one day he disappeared because God took him. So you get this picture, how this took place, how it happened. I have no idea. Did he just get whisked up like a rapture, like we think about when the deliverer comes back again? But what other way? You have the story of Elijah or Elisha, I cannot remember which one it is, let me see here, that is whisked away in the chariot, and he is taken up to heaven. And so you have, here's Enoch, here's the first man in all of history who does not physically die. He is whisked away by God because of his relationship and close relationship with God. And I oftentimes sit there and think, man, what kind of relationship would that have been like?
Yeah.
Could that happen today? Could our relationship with you, God, so God says, hey, Matt, your relationship with me is such that I'll just whisk you right up. It'd be cool to think that way, but I don't know. I doubt that would ever happen to me, but, you know, who knows? It's really cool to think about. So Genesis 5, let's read 22 and 23. We'll skip down there to 22 and 23 and talks about this. I kind of just read it, but someone go ahead and read it.
Yeah. After he became the father of...
Right, yeah, that's exactly what I said.
Enoch walked faithfully with God 300 years and had other sons and daughters. Although Enoch lived a total of 365 years, Enoch walked faithfully with God. Then he was no more because God took him away.
Mm-hmm. They didn't have the Bible at this time. How is it possible that a man... a man in this case, Enoch here, how is it possible that he would have known how to follow God, how he would have known how to teach his kids to know about God? He didn't have the Bible as we know it today. How would he have known all this?
His parents.
His parents, but the relationship with God.
I
think it could be multiple ways that he could have. I also believe that God could have audibly spoke to him because he didn't have a Bible. He didn't have the book. It could be a feeling. Could be it sitting there and the impression of God on his spirit. Hey, this is what I want you to do. And we'll see here oftentimes throughout, you'll see when we get to Noah, it says God told Noah, go build the ark. So the expression is that God spoke to him. So you hear this booming voice. I picture a booming voice. Could have been a soft, quiet voice. But I picture a booming voice from heaven. Noah, you know, go build an ark. I don't know. It's just me. But, you know, and it could be possible that God spoke to Enoch and these men and women throughout history in a way that they only heard it. In other words, you're in a town and nobody else hears the voice of God speak but Enoch, because God was speaking to him directly. So there's different ways to look at that. Today we hear God speak through his word. We hear it speak to our spirit. You know, you'll be reading it and then something pops out to you in the scriptures and like, that's God speaking to you. We hear other people speak to us through other people. I can specifically remember a time in my life working on a stove, a fireplace down in Bridgeville, and a pastor, a former pastor, he's no longer a pastor down there, he moved to North Carolina, and I remember him asking, how old are you? I said, I was 28 at the time, I think 27 at the time, but he goes, so in about another 3 or 4 years, you're going to be pastoring. I'm like, what? So yeah, you'll be doing ministry work. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he just said that out of clear blue sky. I said, okay, how do you know that? He says, I just believe that's what God's going to have you doing. I had no idea that. He was speaking. That was God speaking through him to me. So he felt bold enough to say it, and I'm thankful that he did, because I can go back and look at that, and you can see. That doesn't mean anything. That's one way that God speaks to people. There's many other ways that God speaks. You can be praying and talking to God, or just walking down the street, or working at work and talking, and God speaks to you. So there's different things like that in life. And when God tells you to say something about someone else, like that gentleman did, we should speak it, because that's God trying to use you to speak through you to him or her. It's a pretty cool thing. I wish I had. I don't know if I ever have that gift or not, but we'll see. It was a very pretty cool thing. So Enoch, here he was, and Enoch warned that God was going to judge and punish the people for their unbelief. And when you go along through here, we'll begin to see some of these things throughout, where God uses these people to warn future generations. Genesis 5:24 says. He's walking close fellowship with God, and then one day he disappeared because God took him. It was not like he was going to just stay around. God wasn't going to have him stay around on the earth. So he physically didn't die. And why would God be allowed to do that, by the way?
He can do anything.
Because he created him.
Yes, he created him. Yes, he can do anything. But God is a God. Because God created everything, he has the right to do with whatever he wants with us. And I know that's really hard to think something like, well, wait a minute, I have my rights. I live in America, God. You don't mess with my rights. No, if God wants to take you, he can take you. If he wants you to do something for him, he'll make you do it. And so he has the right to do that. Although I sit there and kind of say, wait a minute, God, you said that we must physically die. Here's a man who did not die. He didn't physically die a physical death. But God had the right to do that. And it would be kind of cool. God, you have the right to do that for me. I don't know. It'd be really cool. But Enoch's son, Methuselah, lived longer than anyone else. And if you read down here, let someone read 25 through 27. And I'm going to scroll over here on this while you read that.
When whatever had lived 187 years, he became the father of Lamech. And after he became the father of Lamech, Methuselah lived 782 years and had other sons and daughters. Altogether, Methuselah lived
969
years, and then he died.
He lived a total of 969 years. 31 years from 1,000. 31 years from 1,000. I mean, that is... I can't even fathom that.
No, I can't either.
That's just a tremendous amount of time on the earth. And when you look at that graph that Beth did, and I'm sitting here thinking, yes... And you look at Noah, 930 years. So if you go from zero of creation, 930 years, and then you go and calculate all this, it's possible that Methuselah and Lamech could have sat in one-on-one, face-to-face communication with Adam at their time frame and got all the knowledge from them right there so that they could pass on to Noah, their son, grandson and son, all that was it. So only two generations, as we would know it, being able to physically firsthand account of this. And so then when Noah gets off the ark, he has the firsthand account of everything that took place from creation and is able to pass that on to us. It's just a phenomenal thought. I never knew that, never thought about that, but that's a pretty cool thing.
If their physical bodies, I mean, when you're 80-90 years old, you're starting to shrivel up.
Yeah.
You know? After 900 years.
I don't think that happened.
Not if they were still having kids.
I guess not. You know, I mean.
Wonder what it was like when we get to the story of Moses and he lives 120 and he dies and God buries him. 120 years. It says he had full health, full strength, and he had full eyesight. So the joke at work this week or past week when I was turned 40 was that, hey, I got 80 more years. I've got my eyesight. It's not perfect, but it's good. And I said, I got my strength right now. It's not strong. I'm not the strongest, but I still got my strength. So if God can let me live another 80 years with the same strength and the same eyesight that I have now, if he could do it for Moses, he could do it for me. Now, the difference is that Moses was here and Noah and them at this time. The earth is dying too. From the time the sin entered the world, it's steady dying. Well, we're thousands of years later, the earth is steady dying. Same way when the moment we're born, they say the moment you're born, your body begins to die, right? You have cells that begin to die, then your hair starts falling out, and yeah, well, we know what that's like. We don't need to go in detail there. But as we look at that, and so our bodies are not the same as their bodies would have been. And so I picture this that, yeah, he probably was a lot stronger, you know, at 969 years old, but he eventually died. His body eventually wore out. It couldn't last. Yeah. I don't know. That's a long time
down
to work.
He got 18 more years in the rest of the state. I'm counting down.
Could you imagine being a woman and giving birth
at 100 years old? Yeah, whatever. Lord bless you all. Let's read 28 through 32.
He named him Noah and said, he will comfort us in the labor and painful toil of our hands caused by the ground of the Lord has cursed. After Noah was born, Lamech lived 595 years and had other sons and daughters. Altogether, Lamech lived a total of 777 years and then he died. After Noah had was 500 years old, he became the father of Shem, Ham, and Japheth.
Yes. So we have now, from the time, 10 generations passing from Adam to Noah. And each generation, it represents a long lifespan. Again, a span during the population of the earth dramatically increased. Again, assuming current population growth figures, okay, today. So if we took today's current population growth figures, and I was doing a little research on this for a sermon on Sunday, and they said since 1970, the world population has doubled. Since 1970. By the year 2025, we will be at 8 billion people. By the year 2050, it could be close to 10 billion people on the face of the earth. Okay, so right now we're at 7.5 billion. But using, just assuming, current population growth figures, there could have been as many as 7 billion people living on the face of the earth at this time. So using the numbers that we have and how population growth grows, that's what they're saying could be possible, could have been living at the time of Noah's birth and right around that time frame. So figuring with that many years in that time, that's a lot of people. Reading the scriptures here and going through this, I would have never thought, I'm reading here, okay, it's 365. We don't hear all the other names of all his kids and then their kids and great-grandkids. I mean, good grief. Just out of Joe Beiler's 9 children at the Beiler family reunion this past week, there was 120 to 130
wow.
children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
Wow.
So you think about, okay, out of one man with 9 and his wife, 9 children, there were now 100 in 90 years. He's only 90 years old. So in 90 years, he's got 140. So you can do the math. Mm-hmm. You can see how real quick the population could explode. But they say approximately 7 billion people. Now just think about that number for a little bit. Most of them didn't think about God or understand that it was important that they thought on him or thought about him. And you think about this world and the world that we live in. Remember, this is Seth's lineage. So Seth's line is the line that is the godly line, the line that there. And there was a lot of rebellious people, a lot of people who rejected. You had Cain's descendants even. All those who were rejecting God. Genesis 6, verse 3. Let's see what Genesis 6, verse 3.
Then the Lord said, my spirit will not contend with man forever, for he is mortal. His days will be 120 years.
Okay. So here we have this phrase where God begins to say, okay, look, my spirit will not put up with these humans for such a long time. He's getting fed up. He's getting a little tired of the way they're living. And I'm not going to contend with them. And so here's where God puts a stamp, 120 years. This is where this is eventually going to be my span. So after the flood, we'll see this take place. Noah, and you begin to see mankind's days begin to just drop off really quick. And you get to where Moses is, and he says he lived 120 years, and that's it. So from there on, 120 years began to span. So I see these posts on Facebook. Oh, there's someone lived 125 years. No, I know that's not true. I know the most that they can live is 120 because God says 120. So someone's math is off. Maybe they didn't have the right date. Maybe they didn't have a good birth certificate. But I know they can't live more than 120 because God says 120 from here on. And so you look at that, and so you say, you might hear someone, oh, I lived 121 years old, or you know, they lived 121. I don't think so. They 120. So somewhere there's a discrepancy there. So here we have this. Ezekiel 33:11 says this. I have no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but that the wicked turn from his way and live. Turn from your evil ways, for why should you die? And Ezekiel is crying out here, and he's saying, hey, I have no, and this is God telling Ezekiel, I have no pleasure. In other words, God doesn't want any single one of us to perish. He didn't want any of these people to perish. 2 Peter 2:5 says this, that Noah is called a preacher of the righteousness. In other words, Noah would get, I picture this, I can't say for sure how he would do this, but he would preach and he would tell people they needed to live a righteous life. Righteousness as we know it is right living. Living a right life, following what God says he wants us to do. So if God says, hey, I don't want you to do this specific thing, then we don't do that, because that's what God said. And so here he is, Noah is out, and he's called a man, a preacher of righteousness. And so Noah was going around warning people, and after that 120 years. What characteristics of God would cause him to continue to speak to people through Noah for another 120 years. Okay, he loves us. That's one of them. What else? What else about God's character?
He wants us with him.
Yeah, but I'm looking for two words that we learned.
Grace
and mercy. Exactly. It's because of God's mercy and grace and his love for man that he wanted. That he was gracious, and we'll see here that when Noah begins to build the ark, and as he goes forward here, that God gives him 120 years. So you got 7.5 billion people, approximately. So again, just using the number based on that there could be that many on the face of the earth, and God begins to tell Noah here he's going to have him build an ark, and it's going to take Noah 120 years approximately to build this ark. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Weren't there other people in the Bible after Noah? That
yeah.
More?
Mm-hmm. But they begin to slowly die off.
Okay,
after that.
Because you said 120 years. Yep. I thought you meant from that point on,
no.
Nobody. And that's
no.
What I was looking
the,
for.
The eventual lifespan of man would be 120 years.
Okay.
And you'll see that as we go through there, you'll see that Noah lived, I forget how many years after the flood, and then he dies. And then you'll see that his sons lived a shorter period of time than him, and they die, and so on and so forth. But once you get down the generation line a little bit longer, that 120 years becomes the end span of...
That's where I was confused.
Yep. Okay, I didn't mean to confuse you there. what would be God's attitude if people refused to repent during this time?
Sadness.
Anger, sadness. What else? What's within his right to do?
He could destroy us.
Yep. It was in his right to no longer show mercy. He could punish them. He could do whatever he wants. But God continues to speak to us just like he spoke to them. He uses, like I said, people. He'll use his word. He uses him speaking to our hearts, our spirits. And as God's spirit continued to warn the people in Noah's time to get attention to generation, why do you think God is trying to get our attention today? Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly the same reasons that it is. He cares about us, and he doesn't want anyone to perish. He doesn't want anyone to be turned away. In other words, he wants everybody to accept his message. And the message that he's given to us is through his Bible and through the Word and through those who speak to us. Every single person that's born into this world, we talked a little bit about this last week, has built or instilled within them a battle, I might say a battle. There's it might be a question in their mind of what's right or what's wrong. In other words, there's a war going on, and I through some scriptures in the New Testament. I mean, we don't have time to go in there tonight, but I personally believe that there is a battle going on for man's soul.
Oh, absolutely.
And who's fighting that battle?
The devil's.
Yeah, Satan's on one side fighting it, and he don't want anybody to turn towards God and believe in this deliverer.
Right.
Right?
Satan wants to get as many souls as he can.
Absolutely. And you know the funny part about that I say it's not funny, it's dying and death and a soul losing and being separated from God is not funny, but Satan already has all that are born.
Right.
So I often wonder, why does he care? Why does he go after him so much? And it's because God has instilled in each person knowing that there is a right and a wrong, and they also know that there's something out there. They're looking for something. I mean, it's just, it doesn't matter what they're looking for, but they're looking for something, and that's because God knows, hey, He wants them. And so he puts a longing inside each person that's born. Satan knows that. Satan was there at creation, and he knows that. And so he fights to keep them in his kingdom, in his camp over here. Sunday, we're going to talk a little bit about this. Because I get to preach Sunday. And we're going to talk about a pile of sand and how does that give us a picture of eternity and what all. I can go down the whole other thing here. But you have this picture of Satan on one side and God on the other wrestling for these souls. And he's using Noah as his preacher of righteousness to go out and tell the people and say, hey, listen, you need to repent, turn to God. So when a person refuses to agree with God and will not believe God's message that he's given to us, then a time may come where God will simply say and allow that person to say, okay, you know what? You don't want to listen. You can go your own way. And we see that over and over again. Proverbs 14:12, I'll turn real quick to that and read that verse. Proverbs 14:12 says this. There is a path before each person that seems right, but in the end is death. In other words, I think the King James would put it, there is a path, there is a way that seems right unto a man, but the end thereof is death. Our ways and our thinking of how we can get to God seem right at times. Sure, just do the Ten Commandments, I won't lie, I won't steal, I won't cheat. I won't do these things. It's good. If I do those things, that's going to make me right with God. No, it don't. And that may seem right to us. That pathway may seem right. It may be doing good works. It may be charity. It may be, you know, going to church every Sunday. It may be doing, hey, I live my life. I don't do anything wrong. I pay my taxes and I do everything right. I live a good moral life. That way may seem right to us, but God says the end of that way is death. That's not the way. That's not the way God expects us to come to him. And so we see that through that. In Genesis 6, 5 and 11, we're going to see some things here real quick. So if someone wants to read Genesis chapter 6, verse 5 and then verse 11, what does it say?
Verse 5 is, the Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on the earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time.
Hmm.
What, till 11 or
just verse 11. Let's read verse 11 too. We'll come back. We'll be bouncing back and forth here.
Now the earth was corrupted in God's sight and was full of violence.
All right, so you have these two verses where God sits back. He's sitting there, and the Lord is observing, and he's watching, and he sees that the earth, and it says that he sees the earth is full of wickedness, that everything they thought and imagined consistently was totally evil. Have you ever gone through a day in your life where you have thought nothing but evil thoughts? I haven't. I mean, there's times where, yeah, I've thought evil thoughts, but then I'm like, oh, this is another good thing. You're doing something good for somebody. That's not an evil thought. Can you picture an earth of 7.5 billion people besides Noah and his family, but 7.5 billion people approximately, or 7 billion, whatever. I use 7.5 billion because it's what we're at now, but let's say 7 billion people, where the thought of man is so evil. And so wicked that their entire thoughts throughout the day are on evil and wickedness.
Wow, that's hard to imagine.
That is really hard to imagine, but that's what it's got to.
But not really. When you look back in history, think of Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
His thoughts were evil of the Jewish people.
Uh-huh.
He was, you've got to be pure white.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing it again already on television.
Ah, yeah.
Pure Charlottes, that's evilness.
Yep.
I mean, the thoughts are there all day. These men are driven by violence and evilness.
And the Bible says that when the deliverer comes back, it will be like the days of Noah. And so when we look at our world around us and we see things like that and we look back and read this,
it's scary.
It is. It can be a thing where, okay, is God observing and saying, okay,
You know he
the
is.
World is like the days of Noah.
He sees all that's going on.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he sees everything that's going on.
That's why I said
getting close. But here they are. They refuse to listen to God. They refuse to trust God. Who are they trusting then again?
Themselves.
They were following who?
The devil.
Satan.
Yeah.
And when someone does not listen to the Spirit of God, and admitting and repenting of their sins, and they're turning to follow Satan, what will happen to them?
Eternal death.
Well, yes, okay, but they're not dead yet. So while they're living on the earth, what's going to happen to them physically? What are they going to do worse? Or what are they going to do more?
What are they going to do more? They're going to do evil, more evil.
Yeah, they're going to do more evil. So in other words, when someone rejects...
They're going to be arrogant.
Yeah.
Because like when Noah was trying to talk to the people, they were arrogant.
Yep.
Ha, ha, ha. That's not going to happen. Ha, ha, ha. So that's arrogance.
Mm-hmm.
They were basically throwing their insults at God.
Yes. So their lives would be controlled by evil more.
Right.
Greed, covetousness, jealousy, hate.
Pretty much look out in society now in some areas.
Well, realistically, I mean, we are seeing some of the very same things that Noah would have saw. It's hard to picture that and say, wow, only 10 generations.
But it's hard to picture that, at least now when we see what we think is evil, there's other Christian believers. But by this, it was only Noah and his few family.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't imagine not having anybody else.
Can you imagine only eight people in church?
No, I mean,
that would be a small church service.
That's what it was. You had Noah, mm-hmm. his wife, his three sons, and their wives. That's it. That's the only people that were on the boat. So that means Noah's family didn't have any children unless they had them while they were on the boat. But they didn't have any children. So it was just Noah and his wife, and then our Shem, Ham, and Japheth, or Japheth, or those three and their wives. That is it. Eight people. So in zip code 19904, within 10 miles of this church, there is approximately 103,000 people living.
Wow.
Okay?
103,000?
Yes. And within a 10-mile radius of this church. I know this because I'm doing study for church on Sunday. So 103,000 people, okay? There are 85 churches within that 10-mile range, approximately 85 churches within that 10-mile range. Very few of those churches can seat 1,000 people.
Right.
Okay? So if every church sat 1,000 people, you have 85,000 people that in that 19904 zip code that could potentially be going to church on a Sunday morning. Now, we know that's not the case because we have approximately 200 here, and you have some churches that have, you know, that are 1,200 to 1,000. But if you figure an average of church is 200 people out of 85 churches, how many people are going to church on Sunday morning? 20,000 maybe. So out of 103,000, you have 20,000 people that... quote-unquote, maybe following Jesus. You don't know that. But a very small amount. And here we have Noah. And when the Bible says it's going to be like the days of Noah when the deliverer comes back, does that mean there's only going to be eight?
No.
I don't think so. No, but a small percentage compared to the large amount of population in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And now you can see this dilemma. Now you got Noah. Here he is. He's only eight. If it was 7 billion, that's a huge difference. And you're standing alone against all the pressure that's going on around you. Now, 7 billion people would not live in the same town as Noah. I don't know how many people lived in the town that Noah lived in, but there's a lot of people around the world at that time. So while it's true that these people were born sinners, they chose to sin. In other words, they had the same ability and the same knowledge of understanding what God wanted, because that would have been passed on. They're choosing to directly go against God. When you think about all this and you think about that God is going to hold everyone responsible for their individual and own sin. God's not going to hold me responsible for your sin. Now, he will hold me responsible as a pastor of a church for the flock, for the church. He'll hold me accountable for what as a pastor I would allow into the church. So if I'm allowing things that are ungodly to come in, he's going to hold me accountable for that. But he's not going to hold me accountable for your sin. He's not going to hold me accountable for my son's sin or for my children's sin. It's Matt's sin. I'm going to have to give account for that. And so he's saying that for all these people. What might be some excuses people would give to avoid responsibility for their own sin? You hear them today.
I wasn't taught that.
Yep. Okay. What else? I wasn't raised to do that. Yep. What else might there be? I hear it a lot of times.
The devil made me do it.
Okay, that one, that's a good one. The devil made me do it. Yeah, satanic forces controlled me. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I've never heard someone use satanic forces, but yeah, the devil made me do it. What else? Somebody else told me to do it. The example with the boys with the spinners. Yeah. Well, they told me to go steal it. No, I don't think so. Okay. How about I'm born this way? I was born this way. Well, we are born. We were born sinners. So that's true. There people use that. Hey, and these are things. Some of these things are, they do have a direct impact on our life into how we handle and how we respond. So my parents didn't love me as a kid growing up. Well, sure, if your parents don't love you and you don't feel love, it's going to affect how you act. But you still have to make a choice. You can choose to not love someone else just because your parents didn't love you. Doesn't mean that God's not going to hold your parents. Yeah, he'll hold them accountable for not loving you. But you have to make the choice too. When someone, oftentimes, this is a very common one. People get abused physically, verbally, emotionally. They get abused in life. We can let those things make decisions for us or help us put this down the path, but we still have to make the choice. We can still choose to physically, verbally, and emotionally abuse other people because of that. That's still a choice. It's not something that, it's part of my DNA. Yes, it is part of DNA when you're a sinner. But you have to choose to do those acts.
Well, you know, you see that in families. You can have two children raised by two parents, and one grows up to be a really good Christian person, you know, doing the right thing, doing right by others, and the other one turns out to be scum of the earth,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're both raised by the same parents in the same household.
And that tells you that it's not necessarily the way you're raised, it's a decision that is made to, okay, I don't want to do this. And so those are balanced. But these are things that literally people will say today. I've said some of them. I've said some of those things when I've gotten caught and think, well, I was born that way. I did it. You know, well, devil made me do it. There's things that, you know, people use that. And it's oftentimes used that because they're guilty. And we want to put the blame. And where does that go back to?
Adam and Eve.
What happened right after the garden? It goes way back to them. So the sin that Adam did in the garden, Eve did in the garden, started all the way through, and it still carries down the day. We want to put the blame on somebody else or something else instead of taking on it. And unfortunately, when we stand before God, it's not going to be, well, I can blame my wife now or blame my kids or my dad or mom. No, God's going to say, Matt, no. Hold on a second. I'm not talking to them. I'm talking to you. I do that with my kids. Well, Elizabeth over here is being mean, so I can be mean. No. Hold on a second. I'm talking to you right now. No, I'll deal with Elizabeth later. That's not how it works. And that's the way it is. When you look at Genesis 5 again, and you see those pictures, or Genesis 6 verse 5, it says he observed and he saw on the earth that everything they thought and imagined was consistently and totally wicked. And people can also live hidden in lives. They can do things behind the scenes that nobody else observes, nobody else sees.
God sees it.
And God sees it. Yes, and he sees it. And so everything that they might be thinking they can do and hide from God, he's seeing and he's saying, no, you can't hide it. And why can God find everything? He created it, and he is what?
Almighty.
He knows all, and he sees all. He's everywhere. That's how big our God is. Just like Adam and Eve, he already knew in the garden they'd souls eaten. And it's the same today. Nobody can hide anything. Can't see anything. Let's read verse 6 and 7 here. Let's see what happens.
6 and 7 what?
Of Genesis 6, sorry.
Genesis 6, 6 and 7?
Mm-hmm, yep.
The Lord regretted that he had made human beings on the earth, and his heart was deeply troubled. So the Lord said, I will wipe from the face of the earth the human race I have created, and with them the animals, the birds, and the creatures that move along the ground, for I regret that I have made them. Genesis.
You read it right. You're exactly right.
Am I in the right spot?
Yep, yeah. You're in the right spot. Get this picture of God. He loves man so much that he was willing to go to Cain and say, give Cain a second chance. He loved Adam and Eve so much that he was willing to give them a chance to repent and come back to him. Here he is going along, and he's going along for 969 years, more longer than that. And he gets to this point in life where he, in the time of history, where he says about the people that he created, his finest creation, you and I, his magnum opus, he gets to the point where he's like, you know what? I've had it with sin. I've had it with everything. I'll just wipe everything out. I'm going to wipe them off the face of the earth. I'm done with it. This translation here uses, it says it broke his heart when he saw the evil that man had done, that sin it caused.
Disappointed it broke your heart. That's how I think of this when I read that verse. God's just so disappointed. It's like you get that feeling where it's just like it breaks your heart.
Yeah. I don't know that I could identify with that to the certain extent that, hey, my kids have done something that just crushed me. I mean, I'm sure someday along the line they will. Because they're human and they're going to make mistakes and they're going to do things that their dad, that's not the way I taught you. That's not what I would expect you to do. But yeah, you're right. The thought of this, the pain, the weight of this on the heart of God, that I'm just going to, that's it, I've had it, and he says I'm just going to wipe him out. What does this tell us about how much he, about sin, what his view of sin is?
It's pure evil.
He hates it. Yeah. He hates pure evil. And he's not going to overlook it. It's something that he has. God's war is at war with sin. He's at war with sin. He hates it. He's at war with Satan and evil and the sin that comes from that. And when he says he's going to do something, he does it. Remember back in the Garden of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
So God here now says something. I'm going to wipe him out. ever threaten your kids?
Oh, yeah.
Now listen, if you don't go to bed or get to, I'm going to count to five. And if not, I'm coming up there and we're going to have a talk. One, two. You ever do that?
Four.
You don't count.
Four, three quarters.
Yeah, I've done it with the kids. I'm tired and I don't want to deal with something. So listen, I'm giving you the count of five. And they know when your dad is serious or when your mom is serious or not, right? They know that. They know, okay, dad's not real serious right now. I can get by with it, right? God's not like that. He's not going to sit there and say, you got five, you got to count to five. And if you don't come back and no, I'll give him a no. When God says something, he follows through. And we're going to get ready to see that here in a minute. We're used to people doing that. We're not used to having something there. In what way is God different from people who threaten but do not carry through?
He carries through.
And why do we know that?
Because we've seen it here in the book.
Okay, we've seen it in the book, and we see it today, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's death. There's death in the world. However, God is not a God that's just... He's not without grace and mercy. Let's read verses 8 through 10. And this is where the joke comes in about the Noah's wife's name. If you've ever heard the joke, what Noah's wife's name is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I'll tell it to you afterwards. So I'm going to read verses.
But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. This is the account of Noah and his family. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked faithfully with God. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and...
I don't know how you pronounce it, Japheth or Japheth or whatever. The joke was that when we ask you as a kid growing up, these are you get these Bible jokes. And do you know what Noah's wife's name was? And I think the King James used word grace instead of favor, but it's the same thing. It means the same thing, favor and grace there. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. So Noah's wife's name was Grace. I don't know. It's just a joke. I had to remember. Think of that when I'm reading this. No, because of God's grace, he forgave and accepted Noah. And why did he accept Noah? What did God say about him? He was a
righteous man.
The only...
He was a just man.
Yep.
Perfect in his generation.
Yes. He was the only blameless or just man in his generation.
In his generation. That's the clue.
Mm-hmm.
Because that generation was wicked.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yep. Noah was born a sinner just like everybody else.
Yep.
Under Satan's control just like everybody else. He too deserved to die. But Noah had responded to God in his spirit and agreed that God was... that he was a sinner and deserving of death. Understanding he was a sinner, what would Noah have brought when he approached God?
Repentance.
Repentance, and what else? He would have done something. Something that God showed them way back when he did something with Adam and Eve.
He would ask for forgiveness.
Ask for forgiveness? And how would he would have done that? What would have been part of his...
Oh, the sacrifice.
Sacrifice, yes. He would have brought the animal sacrifice. So Adam would have been continually doing what Abel did in the garden and continued on throughout history. Noah was trusting God to save him through whom?
The deliverer.
Yes, the deliverer. Yes, in other words, Noah was trusting God that God is going to save him through the deliverer that is to come. Noah did not deserve... okay, we're going to use this here. We're going to go back to this real quick. Here's the grace and the... So Noah did not deserve, right? God was giving Noah what he didn't deserve, right?
Grace and mercy.
Mm-hmm. And he didn't do anything. Nothing that Noah did deserved or could earn the merit of God's favor,
right.
Of God's grace. He was just flat out saved by grace. There's a story here I'd like to read. There was a thief who stole many times from another man. One day the thief was caught in a flooded river and swept downstream. He was badly injured. It looked as if he was going to drown. However, before this thief drowned, the man whom he had stolen rescued him. Just pulled him out of the river. Even though the man recognized the thief, he pulled him out of the river, took him, got him some medical care, paid his bills, and checked on him until he was well. And he never much mentioned the thief's evil deeds. The man rescued the thief, even though he didn't deserve it. And that is something that, an explanation of how we can understand grace. It was not something he deserved. What did that man deserve that stole from him?
He deserved punishment.
Deserved punishment.
But the man showed him grace.
Right.
And mercy.
Yep. You know, I've been praying for somebody who stole, who's been stealing license plates at our store.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, employee license plates. I don't think there's any, not one customer's license plate's been stolen. But I've had, in the last year and a half, six license plates stolen, I think, or eight, maybe six to eight. And so we're in the process of putting cameras up. And you know what my one thing is I'm going to put a camera up, God, so we can catch this person and punish him to the full extent of the law. That's what I was sitting here. And one day I was driving to work, and I'm like, yeah, Lord, we got to get these cameras up, and we can catch this person doing this. We'll stop at Lock, Stock, and Barrel, and we'll catch them, right? You know. And then the thought hit me, you know what would be really cool, because we're going through grace here? Yeah, we catch the person. We say we're going to prosecute them. We go to court, and we get before the judge. And at the end of the judge begins to pronounce sentence on them, say, okay, now can I speak, judge, and say, you know what? Do you understand what grace is? No, I probably don't understand what grace is. Let me explain to you. This is what the judge says. You're going to get whatever, I don't know, time in prison, or you're going to have to pay back fines. I have no idea what the judge would say. And then just say, you know what, as somebody who is bringing you beforehand, we'd like to help you with whatever your needs are, because you're obviously stealing them for something. You're selling them on the black market, most likely, and making money. What is your needs? And extend them something that they don't deserve.
And, you know, that makes you feel so much better, because I was down at a campground and this lady was complaining to have a public shower place.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I took a thing of soap in there and somebody stole it. I'd like to catch him. And I said to her, but did you stop to think that maybe whoever took it might have needed it?
Yeah.
That's grace.
Yeah.
You know.
Extending to them something they don't deserve.
Exactly. Put another thing of soap in there before you.
Yep.
You know, grace to me is wonderful when you can give grace to people. Because like you said, we're all sinners.
Yep.
Every one of us.
Yep. Just like Noah, he deserved the same thing that we deserve.
Right.
And God said, it's just amazing.
Imagine how he was amazed when God put grace on him.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, let's see what happens.
When he got in that ark, he probably thought, wow, what did I do to deserve this?
Well, let's see what happens here. God goes and tells Noah what's going to happen and what he should do. So not only does God extend grace to Noah, but he also gives him a picture of what is coming. Let's read 13 through 17.
So God said to Noah, I am going to put an end to all people, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. I am surely going to destroy both of them and the earth. So make yourself an ark of cypress wood, make rooms in it, and coat it with pitch inside and out. This is how you are to build it. The ark is to be 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, and 45 feet high. Make a roof for it and finish the ark to within 18 inches of the top. Put a door in the side of the ark and make lower, middle, and upper decks. 17.
Yes,
I am going to bring floodwaters on the earth to destroy all life under the heavens. Every creature that has breath of life in it, everything on earth will perish.
You got to get this picture. Until this point, they had no rain on the earth. Nobody knew what rain was. Nobody knew what a flood was. There was nothing like this on the earth. Everything was just as peachy as can be. There was nothing there. And so here comes God along. Noah, in my picture, the way I see, and he's maybe out watching his flock or something. And Noah, I want you to build this boat 450 feet long. There is, until the 1800s, there was no boat built this size. Okay, the 1800s was the first time we had a boat even close to this when it came to the size of a ship. Mid-1800s. But here he is, got this big boat. He's building it. It's massive. And 450 feet is longer than a football field. 75 feet, I don't know how wide a football field is, but it's pretty close to the width of a football field, if not a little wider. And it's not only that, but it's three stories high. This is a massive boat.
I was going to Cheryl and I got to go to the ark that
we had. Yeah.
And it's built to measurement.
Mm-hmm. Height and width, and
it is just, even though you read this and you hear, to actually see the massive size of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was done thousands of years ago.
No saws, no chainsaws, no air nailers, nothing.
It's just mind blowing to see something. Physically be able to see something of that size.
Why would God tell him to build something this big? Aside from the fact that he had all the animals.
Yeah.
Aside from that, why?
Because he wanted it to withstand the floods.
Withstand the floods, but there's another.
Other people not be able to believe it or something.
Yes, yeah. That could be possible. But how, physically think. Those guys that built the boat that you're talking, how many years did it take them?
I forget. It was a long time. They have a progression thing of all the equipment that they use.
And it took them so many years to do that with that type of equipment. Mm-hmm. Here's Noah with no equipment. God knew that. And so God is extending what else to people?
Jobs.
Well, I don't think Noah had anybody else helping him. Time. The grace. Okay. He's extending. Look. I know that it's going to take Noah, because God's all-knowing, it's going to take Noah 120 years, or approximately 120 years, to build this boat.
Well, did he have help? Who helped him? I mean, he was like 600 years old when he built his ark, so he couldn't.
Noah and his sons.
Yeah, because there's no way he could lift all these beams.
Sure.
And stuff.
So, but you have 120 years it takes him to build this boat. God is once again saying, look, I'm giving another 120 years for you guys to repent and come to me. Can you imagine Noah's going, why are you building the boat, Noah? The flood's coming. How do you know what's a flood? Never heard of a flood. God had to give him a picture of what a flood was. God had to give him a picture of this is what's coming.
Well, they had ocean water and stuff where the fish and stuff were. And stuff.
Yeah. They had some water. Picture. Yeah, so they would have had that. But to cover the whole earth with not having it. There's got to be a picture. There's got to be some urgency that's coming to Noah, and he's got, wow, this is coming. I better get going. So he jumps on and starts building the boat. It's just fascinating. And he's doing it because many animals are going to need to fit on the ark. God's going to give him that, going to continue to go. In the book, Noah's Ark, there's a study by a John Woodmore Oppie, something like that, tallied up about 8,000 animals that would have approximately been on the ark. In other words, based on... what our genealogy of animals are today. And we have, you know, like many different versions of dogs. But if you had one or two versions of dogs back then, and now they've progressed into, you know, labs and poodles and all this other stuff that we've created up. If you had 8,000 animals, that means there would have been 16,000 individual animals on the ark. I don't know they probably had some more of that kind of stuff there at the museum.
Yeah.
Three decks high. Whole 9 yards. The total capacity of the ark was approximately 1.4 million cubic feet, which is equal to the volumetric capacity of 522 standard livestock cars, such as used in the modern American railroads. And since it is known that about 240 sheep can be transported in one stock car, a total of over 125,000 sheep could have been carried on the ark, if you were thinking about that. That's, again, picture the size of this boat. And the average size of land animals is less than the size of a sheep. Of all the animals aboard the ark, only about 11% of the animals would have been larger than a sheep, and it is probable that the largest animals were represented by younger specimens, which could have been, you know, babies or things like that. So physically, it is possible to put all the animals on the ark, that, you know, using their theories here. But it wasn't left up to Noah to come up with the blueprint, or, you know, he didn't have to sit there and scratch in his head, okay, God tells me to build an ark, and let me design what an ark is, because he had no idea. No, God gives him specific instructions. He lays out the blueprint for him. Everything he had to done was according to what God had planned. What's God teaching him again?
To depend on him.
Depend on him. Yeah. Same thing he wanted
obedience.
Adam and
Eve.
Yes, obedience.
Obedience.
Yes.
Noah.
Depend on me. I am going to give this to you. I'm going to help you with this.
I have a question. I hope I don't sound stupid or anything, but two of everything was put on the ark. The serpent was a sign of the devil, because he said you would crawl on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Were snakes put on the ark?
Oh, they would have had to be. They're here today. The serpent, Satan used the serpent because he knew the serpent was the wisest and most cunning of all of God's creation that he had created. So he knew that using that. The serpent was just the facade or the body in which Satan used to deceive. The serpent really, a snake really today has nothing to do. We oftentimes connotate that as the devil or evil. But the serpent itself did not have anything to do with Satan. Satan just used, I don't want to use, my kids every once in a while will watch a movie and it has a shapeshifter in it. Someone who can turn into a shape, you know, like Transformers or whatever you call them. And basically that's what Satan did. He used something that he knew that God had created that was wise and crafty, which gives you the understanding that when God created animals with smarts. If you can teach a parrot to talk, that bird's pretty smart. Animals can be taught a lot of stuff. I remember Grandpa Beiler saying, hey, when I was dating Grandma, I would fall asleep after leaving, and the animal would go right to the house, the buggy. It knew its way home. Who taught that? That animal just memorized whatever. And have you seen animals like that in farming and stuff? I mean, it's just, they're taught. They know what to do. Yeah, he said, if I fall asleep, I knew I would get home because the worst part about it is the horse didn't stop at stop signs. Right. It just kept on going. So that was the worst part about it. But, you know.
He's out of a pasture. He knows he's loose. But he'll come back.
Well, same thing with a dog. If a dog gets lost, nine times out of ten, they'll find their way home.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, and
it's instinct.
They stay out for a while.
Huh?
It's instinct.
Yeah, and so God created them. They're, and animals have a soul, yes. And they have a body. They don't have a spirit, like you and I. So the animals don't have a spirit, but they have a soul. How do we know they have a soul? Because a soul is where the mind, will, and emotions live.
I was going to say, you can teach.
Right. They get happy.
Right from wrong. Yeah. Well, I mean right from wrong, because I've tried it.
Sure.
You go in and Duke has done did something again, and you don't change your voice. He just puts his head down.
Mm-hmm. You know that.
He chewed up a shoe again or something.
Absolutely. And yet they don't have a spirit. And the spirit is the one thing that can connect man to God. And that's the difference between animals and man, and us as human beings, is we are created with a spirit. The very breath of God is in us. The spirit of God is in us. And so that is the one thing that connects and separates us from animals. And so yet animals were created. I'm sure Noah used animals to help build this ark.
By pulling
a lot of weight, moving pulleys or whatever.
Yeah.
Sure.
I don't think the ship had to put spiders on there.
Well, or ants and things like that.
I
but
can deal with them as spiders.
They're termites.
Yeah.
Put a termite on there.
And there goes the boat.
We've learned about these examples where God has done things where he's provided over and over. The clothing, you know, with Cain and Abel, the offerings and things, and explaining to them how that happens. And now here, once again, is God setting an example. I'm going to provide for you. And at the end of the flood, next week when we start talking about that, we'll see something that God provides for man as a reminder. And the cool thing about God is that even though God was angry here, he was angry, he wanted to wipe everybody off the face of the earth, God still, in his grace and his mercy, extended to Noah, who deserved to die, just like everybody else, something because of Noah's commitment to him. God instructed Noah to put only one door on the ark. We're going to talk a little bit about that. There was only one door on the ark. There was only one way for which his family could be saved from God's wrath. In addition to the ark, because there was only one door to enter, every person and animal that was to be saved from God's wrath would have to enter the ark through this one door. Oh, I thought we were close to being done. We're not close to it. We got to keep going here. Picture here on the ark. One door to the ark. It's, again, the man's depiction of what the ark was. one door. Genesis 6:22 says this, that Noah did everything exactly as God had commanded him. In other words, he wasn't going to do anything that wasn't there. No rain on the ground. Everything was there. Everything rose up. God said that they watered the earth from the rising of the mist from the ground. Hebrews 11:7 says this, that by faith, it was Noah's faith, that by faith, Noah being divinely warned, in other words, that's God speaking, of things not yet seen. He had not yet seen anything. He had not seen a flood. Moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household. So it was the fear, godly fear, and it was the warning of things that he had not yet seen. The seeing is believing. You ever hear that saying? Mm-hmm.
Seeing is believing.
A lot of people don't believe because they don't see something. Noah trusted that God said, this is what's going to happen, and it happened. Someone read Genesis 7, 1 through 5.
The Lord then said to Noah, go into the ark, you and your whole family, because I have found you righteous in this generation. Take with you 7 pairs of every kind of clean animal, a male and its mate, and 1 pair of every kind of unclean animal, a male and its mate, and also 7 pairs of every kind of bird, male and female, to keep their various kinds alive throughout the earth. 7 days from now I will send rain on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights, and I will wipe from the face of the earth every living creature I have made. And Noah did all that the Lord commanded him.
Yeah. So he gives them a picture here. 7 pairs of male and female of clean animals, which God would have approved for eating and for sacrifices. Okay? So there was things that those are the animals that were going to be sacrificed. They would continue to offer sacrifices after they were come out of the ark. So there were 7 pairs of those. So God was giving them, okay, here's a longer span of time for those animals. And then one of each pair that were considered, quote-unquote, unclean at their time. And those would have been animals that they weren't, God had said, don't eat these animals.
Like pigs
or things that had, you know, a cloved foot. So anything that had a split hoof and weren't supposed to eat. And so God had set that up. And we know that today. Why is it not?
It's almost the opposite. We do eat.
We do eat those today.
Yeah.
But God knew then, doctors will tell you, if you eat ham day after day, so much ham, what will happen?
You're going to have high blood pressure.
Yes.
The salt.
So God knew this way back then. God knew our bodies would not be able to take a lot of those things. So if you eat a portion of ham a day, and that's fine, but if you eat that every meal, have ham, your body is going to get overloaded and it's going to start shutting down. Organs are going to start shutting down. So God knew this. God knew exactly what was good for man to eat. Now, when you get to the New Testament, God says everything that is there, he tells Peter, kill and eat. You can eat whatever. And Peter's like, no, I can't eat that. Lord, I can't eat that because this is unclean. He says, no. What I have created, I've made clean. And so he says, you're able to do that. But again, there are still side effects if you eat too much of a certain type of food. Okay? So God had laid it out. He knew this, and he was trying to protect them. Once again, providing for them what he knew their bodies could
support. Now I have a question. How did the termite get on earth? Did God bring the termite?
Oh, if you can answer that one, I would love to know. I don't know. I mean,
it would eat the boat.
It would eat the boat. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they brought a termite mound onto the boat and stuck it on there for me. I have no idea. That's a good one. We can ask God that one. I don't know what a termite is a family of. It could be a family of the ant or something, and then over time the gene pool there got polluted because it continues to die.
They say a termite can live through a nuclear war.
I'm sure of that. Those guys can live through a lot of stuff.
And they can live through that.
All right, let's read 6 through 15.
Noah was 600 years and his wife and his sons. And Noah and his sons and his wife and his sons, sons' wives, entered the ark to escape the waters of the flood. Pairs of clean and unclean animals, of birds and of all creatures that moved along the ground. Male and female came to Noah and entered the ark, as God had commanded Noah. And after the 7 days, the flood waters came on the earth. In the 600th years of Noah's life, on the 17th day of the second month, on that day all the springs of the great deep burst forth, and the floodgates of the heavens were opened. And rain fell on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. On that very day, Noah and his sons, Shem, Ham, and together with his wife and the wives of his three sons, entered the ark. They had with them every wild animal according to its kind, all livestock according to their kinds, every creature that moves along the ground according to its kind, and every bird according to its kind, everything with wings, pairs of all creatures that have the breath of life in them came to Noah and entered the ark.
It's amazing here, a picture and a depiction of all these animals coming. As if God just obviously, hey, you two, go. Noah, go. And I just picture this, Noah standing at the door. They're all lining up, going up into the boat. I mean, it's amazing. Lions, tigers, whatever, you know, going up into the boat, and here they are. No, I mean, no, it says that God told him to go into the boat. And so here he is, and God lines him up, and he gets them, take two of every kind, brings them up into the boat, and they get up in there. They all go through that front door, the only door that's on it. And so God says here, for 40 days and 40 nights. And then it says, a male and female of each kind enter, just as God had commanded Noah. Then the Lord closed the door behind him. Now, get this picture. You had that. I don't know if they'll bring that picture back up again. The Lord shut the door. Why would God shut the door?
To make sure it was secure.
Okay.
To make sure evil didn't enter.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. So evil wasn't going to enter? That no one else was getting on the boat.
Nope.
I picture this door as a massive door, a pretty large door. It'd have to be pretty large if an elephant was going through it, unless it was a baby elephant.
Giraffes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it'd have to be pretty big.
Yep. God didn't leave it up to Noah to shut the door. God himself shut Noah and his family all in a place of safety. They were safe because God shut them in. The people who had not repented were shut on the outside of the ark. They could not escape God's judgment because God had shut them out. In other words, again, God is showing, once again, I provide the way, I provide the opening, I'm providing the safety, I'm providing everything for you. They refused to heed God's warning through Noah, so now they had no longer the opportunity to change their minds and beliefs. Even if they cried and pleaded outside the door, which I'm sure took place, that's probably one of the, I had an accident years ago. I wasn't involved in it, but I was driving behind a man who either fell asleep or had a stroke or heart attack or something, and he ran off the road. I was on the phone with them at the store, and immediately I saw he wasn't going to make the curve. I hung up. I called 911 before he got off the road, and I was standing there. His truck caught on fire. There was a bunch of people in front of it came to the thing, and we had fire extinguishers and bags of sand. We were trying to stop this. Nobody wanted to get in there and take him out because the paramedics were like, don't move him because if he hit his head on the thing, you have a broken neck, you know, you could have all this stuff. Well, there come a guy that was a firefighter, volunteer firefighter. He's like, we got to get him out. The fire's going to take over the truck. So he reached in, cuts the seatbelt, drags the man out on the ground. Regardless, the man didn't make it. He died. But I won't forget, I got a phone call from the state police about 3 or 4 days later, saying, we want to follow up with you. You're one of the witnesses who were at the witness of the accident. You called in. We want to make sure you didn't have any trauma or, you know, you're not affected by the accident. I said, no. I said, I'm a follower of Jesus, and I know where I'm going, so I understand that, And, well, the family wants to know if they could reach out to you if they have questions to help them through their trauma through the whole thing. I said, absolutely. I said, it's no problem at all. I said, no. But I can't imagine what Noah and their family would the sounds. Now, I know the sound of thunder and lightning might have drowned out a lot of it, but when you've got thousands and thousands of people wailing and crying at the top of their lungs because they are drowning.
It had to be overwhelming for
them. Horrific.
Yeah.
You know, just a time in history where you got to get the picture of this immense, extreme sound that is going on. And you have to picture that knowing them, knowing we're saved on the inside. Here's maybe family members, other family members who are down the road, you know, ancestors, just they're lost. What kind of picture is that in their minds? And what kind of impact would that leave on them?
But you know, when God shut the door, it made it so Noah wasn't at fault for those people.
Oh, right. Yes. If Noah shut the door, I'm cutting you out. No, God did that. You're right. You're right, John. Very good point. That'll leave them of all the pressure that, hey, if this was not my... God shut the door. He's the one who shut him out, not me.
Right.
And yes, that's a very good point. Very good point. 17:21. We already read 17. Let's read 21 through 23. It says this... And all the living things on the earth died. Birds, domestic animals, wild animals, small animals that scurried along the ground. And all the people, everything that had breath and lived on dry land died. God wiped out everything living on the earth. People, livestock, small animals that scurried along the ground, and the birds of the sky, all were destroyed. The only people who survived were Noah and those with him on the boat, and the flood waters covered the earth for 150 days. So 5 months worth of living on this boat that they had to live. The ways, 40 days and 40 nights, the waters filled up the earth. Mm-hmm. It got to the point, it had to go 40 days and 40 nights because it had to reach the topest, the tallest mountain to cover everything, because everything had to be completely covered. And so there, then it takes place. Where did all that water come from? What did God do in the second day of creation? He says he placed it above the earth's atmosphere. He had water above the earth, and he separated it, remember? And it was water that God caused to fall as a torrential rain on the earth. God knew this was going to happen. Did he not know back at creation?
Sure he did.
He knew he was going to have a flood. God knew that. God's a God of order. He knew all that was in place beforehand. These great fountains of water gushed out over the earth. You know, it came from out of the ground after the flood covered the earth. God stopped the rain from falling and then the water from gushing up from within. Genesis 8:2, everyone outside the earth, everyone was outside the ark was destroyed by God. There's your point, John. It was God that did that. It wasn't Noah. But God remembered Noah and all the wild animals and livestock with him on the boat. And he sent a wind to blow across the earth, and the floodwaters began to recede. The underground water stopped flowing, and the torrential rains from the sky were stopped. Why did everybody else die? They didn't believe. They refused to believe God. They refused to believe it. In what way are the majority of people today like those who died in the flood? This is in closing.
They believe in God. They don't. Their hearts aren't with the Lord, and He knows it. You know, I mean, like we've said 100 times in here, mm-hmm. God knows what's in your heart. And if you don't have a pure heart and you don't love Him with all your heart, He knows it.
Yep, and I find it very interesting. You can walk around the streets and say, "Hey, do you believe in God?"
People
sure,
say, yeah,
absolutely. Right. They'll say right on the thing, sure, I believe there's a God. You start talking about the deliverer, well, that's just not a real thing. There is this sense that people believe in a higher power, that
yeah,
there is something out there that's a bigger than themselves.
But they don't know what.
Right.
And they'll say a higher power. They'll say, I believe in the higher power. And, you know, it's God.
I had a resident this week that told me he's ready to die.